You're listening to a podcast from 702.
702.
The big story of the day.
So our focus today is on the Constitutional Court. It's asked former President Jacob Zuma to provide evidence to that court as to what sanction would be appropriate if he's found guilty of contempt of court. So the court has directed the former president to file an affidavit of no longer than 15 pages by Wednesday. Remember, the former president defied the Constitutional Court ruling that he must appear before the state capture inquiry and answer its questions. The commission has argued in court that he must be sent straight to jail for 2 years. What the court wants Zuma to do now is provide his input in the nature and the magnitude of the prison sentence he should face in an event that he's found guilty. So in a country founded on constitutional supremacy and equality before the law, what perception does this directive create? Do you understand perhaps where the court may be coming from, given how unprecedented the case is? And I want to know if you think Zuma will actually comply with this directive, having defied the court previously and questioned its credibility. Can give us a call on 011-883-0702. The WhatsApp line is 072-702-1702. You can send us SMSs on 31702. In a moment, I'll be joined by Karen Mon, who's a senior legal journalist at News 24. But here's a conversation I had with Craig Watt-Pringle, who is with the General Counsel of the Bar. All right, Craig, thank you so much for your time. So my understanding is it's not uncommon for courts, including the Constitutional Court, to ask parties for submissions after judgment has been reserved. In fact, in a criminal case, it's common for a court to find someone guilty and then ask the parties to address it on appropriate sentence. But Zuma hasn't been found guilty of contempt just yet. So this is unusual. So the question is, does this directive create a perception of special treatment?
Clement, I think that some context is required here. I do think that the negative reaction is possibly both overblown and premature. And if you'll give me a minute or two, I need to put my answer in context.
First, sure.
Contempt is a hybrid between criminal and civil proceedings. So in a criminal case, the court first establishes guilt, and then there's a separate hearing on appropriate sanction if the finding is one of guilt on the charge. In contempt proceedings, both issues are typically dealt with in one hearing. But there's nothing wrong, as you said, with the court inviting further submissions in relation to any matter after it has reserved judgment, as long as it gives the opportunity to both parties. This directive is unusual for a number of reasons. Firstly, as you mentioned, it comes before any guilty finding. That doesn't per se make it wrong, but one could certainly argue that it would have been more helpful, even to Mr. Zuma, if the directive was issued after the court had pronounced on the issue of guilt. Yeah. Because assuming that they find him guilty, they would also deal with the seriousness with which they viewed his conduct, and it would be against that background that he would be able to make submissions. The further interesting or unusual point about this is that Mr. Zuma has flatly refused to participate in these proceedings at all. And so one could argue that there was no reason for the court to give him yet a further opportunity, and the court risks creating the perception that he's getting special treatment, and that seems to be a perception that is held by many. However, I don't know if you read the piece by Fanny Rapkin in the Sunday Times, where she points out that this is an unusual case inter alia because the Constitutional Court is both the court of first instance and no appeal from this finding. So you could interpret the court's conduct as being extra cautious, and so it can never be said that they didn't give Mr. Zuma a proper opportunity.
Go ahead, Craig.
Last point. If anything, one might say that the directive signals that the court has not excluded a custodial sentence, or if you want to put it more harshly, that they're seriously considering such a sentence. And the real test will come when the Constitutional Court rules on the matter, because Mr. Zuma's refusal to comply with its earlier orders has been absolute, it's been sustained and unexplained. The fact that he didn't participate means he doesn't say, well, I misunderstood the ruling, or I would like to, but I can't. He simply has washed his hands of the matter and said, well, do your damnedest. So he's thrown down the gauntlet to the Constitutional Court. It'll be interesting to see what they do.
And as you indicate, the aspects of this case are unprecedented. This is the first time that the Constitutional Court has been asked to send someone straight to prison. And this case was heard without Zuma even participating, not even, you know, bothering to defend himself. Do you then think this approach is then justified, taken by the Constitutional Court? Is it not prudent, given how unprecedented the case is and how, as you said, whatever the court decides, you know, it is the last word?
Yes, I think that the court is being extra cautious. It understands the political profile of this matter. And as I said, the proof of the pudding will be when they give their final judgment in the matter. It's difficult to assess the Constitutional Court's reasons for what it's done, because this is not a judgment. It's a practice directive. It's just an administrative directive, and courts don't usually give reasons for administrative directives. If this had been an interlocutory order, it would usually have come with reasons, and then one could assess the reasons. Possibly the court will explain the reasons for this when they give the final judgment. But at this stage, one is left to speculate, and speculation sometimes leads to different inferences being drawn. But as I say, I think we should give the Constitutional Court the benefit of the doubt and say, well, they're being extra cautious. Doesn't necessarily mean special treatment, because Mr. Zuma is who he is.
All right. Craig Watt-Pringle, thank you so much for your time. He's with the General Counsel of the Bar. All right. So let's bring in Karen Morn, who is a senior legal journalist at News 24. And I'll take your reflections as well on this decision and what you think on 011-883-0702. Karen, thank you so much for making time. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So the former president did not participate in the state capture inquiry's application for him to be forced to appear before the inquiry. Neither did he respond to the subsequent contempt case against him. He didn't bother to even defend himself. Instead, he sent a statement warning of people rising up against what he describes as judicial corruption. What does the court have? You know, it has this confidence that he will participate this time around. And I wonder if that is the case and it's justified.
My honest reading of this is I think Craig Watt-Pringle is completely on the money. And I think Franny Rapkin also, her piece was excellent. But I think essentially what this is in some respects is the Crown Court trying to exercise a bit of procedurality into a situation that is escaping into something that is almost democracy threatening. Because Jacob Zuma has effectively shown that he has no respect for rule of law. He doesn't believe that, you know, he doesn't want to recognize the fundamental principle that was espoused by the Constitutional Court, that he needed to go before the inquiry and answer non-incriminating questions, because that was what be required of any ordinary person, and has instead, displayed that kind of ruling as being somehow akin to the apartheid state persecution of PAC Robert Sobukwe. Mm. He has, when the contempt case came, he didn't even, elect to file a notice to abide or notice of opposition, nothing to indicate what his stance was, but again, outside the sphere of the courtroom, making all kinds of pronouncements about potential coups against unlawful judges. He's accused judges of taking bribes from the former president's election campaign without a shred of evidence. One of those judges, who sealed the record, is coming before the JSC this afternoon to be interviewed for a position at the Constitutional Court. We are in a country, as a country, are in a moment of kind of extreme, I would say, on the precipice of a form of profound crisis. If, you know, this kind of attitude that he's taken, that effectively the laws and the rules and the courts do not apply to him because he believes that they're just biased against him and therefore he doesn't have to listen to them. If that belief is not dealt with effectively by the judicial system and by the society in general, it constitutes a significant threat to all of us.
Yeah. Do you think he will comply with the directive, Karen? And I know it's very difficult to say what the former president is thinking now, because he could use this as opportunity as another opportunity to launch yet another attack on judiciary. But then again, he has no confidence in the Constitutional Court. He has attacked it, as you have indicated. So maybe him subjecting himself to the authority of the court, whose credibility is questioned, would in itself be contradictory.
Well, I mean, you know, the thing was when this hearing was held, the Constitutional Court judges, I mean, some of the judges that he most vociferously attacked, including Judge Daya Pillay, were pained to ask Thembeka and Gwaiatobi, is a suspended sentence not possible? Is a fine not possible? You know, how, you know, can we not get, you know, can we not arrange a situation where he can come before the court and avoid, come before the inquiry and avoid imprisonment through a suspended sentence arrangement? So the court is in a horrible, horrible position. They have been attacked by the person that they must now make an unprecedented decision about. They must make a decision to potentially send him to prison. They have the inquiry on one hand saying that Jacob Zuma threatens the very tenure of rule of law in this country. And they have Zuma on the other hand saying, you're persecuting me. And this is, you know, you motivated by nefarious and unlawful purposes. And the public in the middle saying, what are you going to do? How are you going to manage this? With a very controversial and almost certain, you know, the certainty of a backlash of some form or another, whatever they decide. So, you know, it's a kind of precipice moment for this country. And I think if Jacob Zuma was, did in fact care for the country that he led for 9 years, he would try and make a decision in response to this that would be in the best interest of everyone and would essentially take the hot boiling pot off the stove before we all go up in flames.
Exactly.
Is that going to happen? I don't know. I mean, I hope that those within the ANC who have his ear are urging him to make a decision that is healthy for the democracy, because, you know, him going to prison and the kind of, you know, the kind of crisis situation that may lead to, whether it happens, there's going to be some form of blowback on this. It's really not a good space for any of us to be in at this point.
Look, and the political intervention, from what we've seen, seems to have failed. Whether you talk of political parties outside of the ANC, the EFF, the top six met with him, it doesn't look like he's been listening. The ANC Women's League met with him. The police minister went there in his capacity as the police minister, saying he wants to avoid, you know, what could come as a result of Zuma being arrested. It doesn't look like he's been listening to all of that. And I wonder politically, Karen, if this emboldens him. You know, one of the questions I asked a couple of weeks ago is, why are we dilly-dallying around him? If someone is defying the Constitution, it's quite clear. Arrest him and deal with the consequences. We've got a police force, we've got law enforcement officers. If there are people that say they want to obstruct justice and they want to form a human chain around him, they also must be arrested. Do you think the Constitutional Court now going to him and saying, tell us what sanction is appropriate, somehow emboldens him politically?
No, I think I would agree with Craig Watt-Kringle. I think they're trying to exercise a kind of a form of judicial regulation of the process. I think it strongly indicates that they do intend to potentially give him a custodial sentence, whether it's suspended or not, we don't know. But I think that, you know, I think I get the strong sense that they are preparing themselves to make a very, very tough decision. And they want to be able to turn to the public and say, he had an opportunity to respond when the inquiry, you know, said that they were going to bring this application to compel him. He had a chance to respond when there was a contempt case against him. And they had a chance to respond when, you know, the sentence or the potential sanction was put on the table, and he was alerted to the fact that, look, this is a very real possibility. You are looking at a guilty finding and you are looking at a potential sanction. What is your view on that? And it's now descended into the realm of a kind of game of legal and political chicken, if you were, and it's really a sense of who blinks first. But I think the great sadness is that, you know, 25 years or so into democracy, I think, you know, all of those judges on this bench have lived through apartheid, have lived through what happened, the persecution, etc. And Jacob Zuma has constructed his situation in terms of what happened there. And I think he's done it with a very strong realization of, even if you can able to discard his argument, how fundamentally triggering that is.
Yeah.
You know, the thought, you know, whatever your views on Jacob Zuma, the thought of him going to prison for not going to the state capture inquiry, you know, it's there will be many people who will shout me down and say, well, you know, he deserves it, bloody, bloody, bloody. But there's something deeply tragic about the moment that we find ourselves in. And I just hope that somehow at the last moment that we are able to talk ourselves off the brink, because I don't think that this is a good, healthy space for our democracy to be in. And I think it fundamentally threatens the rule of law if it's not resolved in a way that enables, the former president to be accountable the way he needs to be, and the public to believe that everyone is equal before the law, without him having to go to jail to prove that.
Yeah, I imagine that the state capture inquiry will be given an opportunity to respond if the former president, complies with this directive and files this affidavit by Wednesday. We had Advocate Tembeka Ngugai Thobi in the contempt of court case when he was arguing for a 2-year sentence representing the commission, and he was quite clear to say we're not seeking his appearance anymore. We want and we are seeking his punishment now. They will respond, right, if Zuma complies with this and files this affidavit?
No, of course. And I mean, they've been given an opportunity, as have the amicus curiae in the case who weren't heard, to provide their input. I mean, in some respects, Craig Watt-Pringle, very correct. This is a kind of hybrid of a criminal and civil process. And that's the criminal aspect, is the state and the prosecution, as it were, and the defense essentially saying argument and aggravation and mitigation of sentence. And then ultimately the judges will need to decide.
Yeah, absolutely. Karen, thank you so much for always making time to help us understand these legal matters. Karen Mon is a senior legal journalist at News 24.